It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And they all swore that day that from then forth, though they might wobble, none of them would ever again fall down. And that's why the Weevils thing is like that. That's why the jingle, yeah.
So, I mean, I just thought it was part of the way they were. I didn't know it was like a religion.
It's a major, major, huge tragedy in their history, really. It's, I mean, yeah, it's, they don't teach much Weevil history in schools these days, you know, more's the pity. But my parents felt I should know about my, you know, my ethnicity and my history. I'm only half Weevil, and I'm not, I mean, I don't practice.
Do they have a text? Do they have a sacred text?
Oh, yeah. Well, they call it a manual, but Yeah, it's, yeah.
I'll have to read that sometime. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, no, you're going to need a lot less Thetans if you want that.
What's that supposed to be?
It's complicated. We shouldn't get into it now. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world that gets preempted for the State of the Union address. Like, if you're listening to it offline, a recording of it, if it's going on right then, it stops the podcast. We have no idea how it happened.
No.
Clearly, when we were setting it up, we checked the wrong box or something. But, like, I can't find anything in the settings now. And it's not just the U.S. president. It's any
president.
Prime ministers, no.
No.
But if it's a president, specifically giving a State of the Union, any of them stops.
Yep.
So we're sorry about that. But it's a done deal. Like, there's nothing we can do about it. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 345, and I think in Model T just
I was going to say, apparently the first car just drove past our house. Those of you who heard what sounded like an extremely small steam train was, in fact, had wheels. Pretty much otherwise, it was exactly that. Yeah,
it was weird.
All right, then. For those of you just joining us, here's how the show works. We have a hat, it's magic, and then it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks like yourselves, cool folks, neat folks, kind folks, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifests physically within the hat itself. We, its exploding servants, draw those note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, do that for about an hour. That's the whole show.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
so
that's the whole show.
Good night, everyone. How was your week?
It was good. I'm reading Bram Stoker right now. I read Dracula again for the second time in the night. I just finished reading Jewel of the Seven Stars. It's a mummy story that he wrote. It's pretty good. For some reason, I don't even remember why. I mean, like I said, I'm reading Bram Stoker, and I'm online, and I'm doing some research on some other stuff, and I end up reading some articles about him.
Okay.
And I think I got there through looking at some feminist material and, you know, critiques of his work from a feminist perspective. And this particular article was talking about how Dracula was, the work was critical of the so-called New Woman, you know, of the 19th century. Yeah, And I could not figure out why this person who wrote this article thought that the story was critical of the New Woman. Everything they said that the text said, I did not notice the text saying this. Then it quoted a bit where Mina Harker's talking about the New Woman and about how, you know, maybe one day, talking about getting married and, you know, maybe one day the New Woman will be the one who proposes. Mm. And she just makes this mention of this, and that's all of the quote they had there. There wasn't anything about the quote that seemed critical of this trend. It was just noting it. And I thought, well, that's not something, that's not a critique on the New Woman. In fact, what they left out was in the very next line, Mina Harker says something like, and good for them if that works out for them or whatever. Like, to me, the story does the exact opposite. Mina's often talked about by Van Helsing. And by the way, this my second reading, it feels like Van Helsing is like a Mary Sue character for Bram Stoker. I mean, he's like super smart, and whenever everyone's sad, he gives this big speech that inspires everybody.
I mean, and he does get to come out with, like, essentially he has magic powers. Oh, yeah. Like, oh yeah, here's this new thing you didn't know about vampires we can do now.
Yeah, very, very much a Mary. I think this is this is the way Bram Stoker would like to be, imagine himself to be.
See?
Or if he wrote the play, because, you know, he was big in the theater. Yeah. If he wrote the play, he would want to play Van Helsing.
See, and this is why I think I'm a brilliant author, because I was aware of the possibility of me getting all Mary Sue on this, and I did, except here's the thing. I'm going to go so far as to say consciously spread it around.
Oh, yeah, so a little certain, bit here, a little bit there.
Yeah, yeah. Because that was the thing. I was like, who's me in this? And I'm like, there's like half a dozen people that are me in this, just in different ways. And I'm like, yeah, I made this one really awesome this way. And, oh, this one is really the focus of this. And I'm like pretending they're all me. So it's fine.
That works. But anyway, Van Helsing.
Magical talking head. Tony tells everyone he's a brilliant author.
Van Helsing, who's clearly supposed to be someone you respect, is constantly talking about how smart Mina is. I mean, frequently he says that she's got a woman's heart and a man's brain. Okay, that's a fairly sexist thing to say.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah.
In that time period,
it's clearly meant as a,
right,
a positive.
And but also Mina herself is portrayed very much that way. She is the most well-rounded character in the whole thing, and she's clearly the hero of the group in terms of overcoming Dracula. There's just no question about it. And she's also very much the New Woman. Now, I'll grant you, she also loves her husband. She also talks about how much she admires men's bravery and all this other stuff. But
and as people, including me, and I think we've had this conversation, have noted, her perspective falls out of the book a fair chunk before the end. And that's a little weird. Her voice, as it were. There aren't, her journal entries stop a not insignificant way from the end. And that, and I know for me, especially from that point on, because it was always being told in the third person, and it was always about, like, rescuing her at that point, in my head, she very much suddenly turned into an object. Mm. And I think I think these are compatible ideas. I think some of it is both people critical and both complimentary of it, maybe reading something that if somebody wrote this today, that's what it would be signifying, but not necessarily at the time.
Well, I just think that, you know, from everything I'm going to admit here, my knowledge is limited. From everything I know about 19th century feminism, it was kind of a middling perspective, if you were a feminist, to still affirm the gender binary. Mm. And one of the reasons you thought women should be equally represented in government and in business and all these other things was because women are different than men, and they have something valuable to say in these spheres. And if they're not represented, all you have is the men's opinions, and that's only half of humanity, and that's not good enough. And I got that idea both times I read this story. It's not the feminism that we have today, where we're saying, look, the gender binary is hugely problematic. It affirms a gender binary, but I think that was kind of the middle of the road feminism of that day. Certainly you had feminists who affirmed the gender binary, and all they cared about was getting the vote. And once the vote was had, they were done. That was as far as their feminism went. You had other more radical feminists who were challenging the gender binary at that time. But I think The more common feminism of the day was to affirm the gender binary, but say women are a valid half of the human voice, and so therefore need to be represented equally. And it seemed to me that in this story, Mina was the most well-rounded character. She did the most to overcome Dracula. She was clearly the hero of the story, and she stood in direct contrast to the many men in the story. I'll grant she's kind of smurfetted in the story, but all of those men are very two-dimensional. They're very stereotypically drawn and not well-rounded at all. So I'm not saying that Bram Stoker was this great progressive author or anything. I'm just saying that to say that he was against the new woman, quote-unquote, I do not see evidence of that at all.
Well, that's the good news about literary criticism. It only matters if you believe it. No, 100%. What is the other point? What is the point of coming up with the correct interpretation?
No, I agree. That's a good point.
Because ultimately, we can't do anything about him. He already wrote it. We're not going to take it out of circulation, and everybody's going to get what they got out of it. Certain people may come out of that feeling really icky, as though it was somewhat misogynist. You came out of it feeling quite the opposite, and that's great.
But I guess though, if you're going to write an article like this person wrote, and you're going to make these assertions, you should have better evidence, I guess. I mean, the quote they used, okay, it by itself didn't prove their point,
yeah,
and especially taken out of context, it really didn't prove their point. So I don't know what does prove their point. You see what I'm saying? I mean,
okay, this is the thing. What William is saying is, I don't understand why they wrote what they wrote.
Yeah.
To most humans, that would be, I think they were wrong. Like they wrote what they wrote because they thought it was correct.
But what if I'm wrong? I mean,
then what if you are?
Because I'd like to be persuaded, but...
Who? Are you talking... Are you hoping they're listening?
No. Just anybody who's read it who thinks that this person who wrote this article is correct. Maybe they have a better argument, and I can see it and go, oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, This is the thing. That's a valid thing you want. Most people are like, so I read this article, and I don't really agree with this, so I didn't really like it in that sense. Maybe somebody else has a different... You always come across like, oh my God, why was this written? Like, there's always this tone in your voice, like you're very concerned with why somebody has that position. Not like, I don't really agree with that. Maybe it's always like, oh my God, why are they thinking that way?
Well, because I want to know.
But why? You sound panicked, and you sound like it carries weight. Well, you sound like it is extremely important for me to know this.
It just carries weight for me. For me personally.
Yeah, as a bit of academic interest. I mean, it's not...
No. Not really that.
So it's really important that you find out the answer to this.
It's important to me, sure. Because I am creating stuff myself, which, you know, I'll grant, nobody's seeing or reading at the moment. But to me, how I create it and what I do is, you know, I want to do it right. And if I'm reading something and it is what this person says it is, and I'm not getting that at all, I'm getting the opposite, well, then how do I know the stuff I'm creating isn't actually the worst sexist garbage ever, and I just am too dumb to know what the difference is? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, then in this case, I would say you should try and contact the author.
Oh, the author of the
article. Because it does sound serious to me. Mm. To me, like, I couldn't even...
Which I have done before. I've done that before, contacted the author and said, what do you mean by this exactly?
The sheer volume of articles about stuff I care about on the internet that disagree with how I feel about them prevents me from caring.
Well, but this is...
I'm just like, I mean, I'll read them, and sometimes I'll be like, those are valid points. That's why I like literary criticism, because I will read them and I will be, huh, this gives me a new way to look at it. But if I read one and I'm like, yeah, I don't agree with that at all, what I say is, yeah, you're full of shit, and I move on to another one, because there just wouldn't be time to contact all of those people.
Well, you know...
So is there something about this article that you feel like this person does know? Well, like there's something about it that you're like, I feel like they do have something here, but it's just not resonating with me.
It's not this article. It's that I guess I have a sense that this article is one of, like, it's not just this person in this article. It's I feel like this person is expressing a view that a lot of people have.
I suppose that's fair in this case, because when you were talking about the being critical of the new woman, I was like, yeah, no, I remember that.
Yeah, so so it's not just one person. It's the idea that a lot of people think this, and I'm a man. I might not fully understand.
Spoilers for anybody who's never met us in person.
I might not fully understand. William's a man. I might not fully understand these things, right? I mean, I probably haven't.
In that case, go find more articles on this. I mean, I'm sure. Well, that's the thing. There's going to be a bunch of them, or we're both going to be wrong, and it's not a commonly held position.
No, well, you know, but that's right.
Because I mean, that's when I had a certain. And this is a dumber version, but a certain contingent of people I know, women I knew, in a lot of cases. Really didn't like Wonder Woman.
Yeah, right.
And I couldn't even cope. But some of them forced upon me links to articles about how they didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was annoyed at the time. But I'm really glad they did, because I read those and I actually ended up looking a couple myself. And I absolutely still agree with my position on Wonder Woman. 100%. But they absolutely also brought up valid points
right.
that I found interesting. And that's the kind of thing about it. So if you're reading this and you're like, I don't agree with this, but I feel like this is a broader school of thought, so there might be something here. I'd say that's the next thing you do. And I'm sure you can find tons of Bram Stoker's Dracula is anti-feminist essays on the internet, because you could find anything is anti-feminist. Essays on the internet, because there's a lot of good feminist would-be journalists out there that are looking into this stuff.
That just discourages me.
Why?
Because I don't just want more information. I don't know. See, that's the problem with today, is we've talked about this before. I have organizations that I support and that I get decent news from, whose news I have to double-check, because even though I like them and I believe in their cause, sometimes they pull dirty tricks just like everybody else to get people all whipped up. And a lot of times I'll go to a source of information and I won't know if it's just some sensationalistic piece of crap. Like maybe that article I'm talking about was. I don't know.
Well, but this is a literary critique. It's no such thing as is there real news. It's absolutely someone's opinion no matter what. So to me at least, unless I know the individuals in question or have seen more of their work, every single thing like that has equal value, because they're just presenting their case.
Yeah, I know.
And I mean, maybe somebody sucks at it, but you'll read that because it'll be a sucky argument.
Maybe I just worry too much about my own ability to tell these kinds of stories. I don't know.
I understand the position, and believe me, I am already as somebody who swears, and this is going to be like my slogan now, I'm never going to write a book where anybody gets raped or anybody was raped previously, ever. Promise to you guys.
Yeah, me neither.
Nothing, no book, no short story.
Yeah.
Never going to have that. I'm already rethinking like scenes in my book that I'm like, from a metaphoric perspective, is this like... And actually, and my answer to this, as you already know, is I'm going to crowdsource the fuck out of my book. I've got like 18 people on the line to edit this. Mm-hmm. And... I only have two major thrusts that I want people to focus on, and one of them is it feminist? But, first of all, I'm going to get conflicting answers. I guarantee you, out of those 18 people, somebody's going to find such and such scene to be a little sexist, and somebody else is going to find it not sexist, but empowering.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do the best I can. No, but here's the thing, and here's, I know you know this, but you might need to just have it as a little mantra. You're never going to be sure. Because you can't be. Because honestly, at its best, you're still going to have some stuff that some people are going to find offensive. And some people are not. So the best you can do is as much data as you can get from sources that you think are good and go by them.
Right. But, I mean, sometimes it feels like when I read stuff people write about Dracula, I don't know how I could be so wrong. Like, it's a matter of opinion, like you say. But how could I be so wrong to see it so completely different? The other story I read, The Jewel of Seven Stars, it's a fun read because, unlike Dracula, it's not like found material, you know? Which Dracula's really fun that way. But this is from a first-person perspective. And it reads just like, when I'm reading it, it's like I'm reading the novelization of a black and white Hollywood movie, because how everything happens, you know. And there's a romance between this guy and this woman, and it's like a totally old time movie or whatever. Mm-hmm. And in that way, there's a lot of
weirdly, I think I know of somebody trying to turn this into a movie, and apparently it was horrible.
Well, I think it could make a good film, but the way it is, it's very heteronormative, and you know, and she's the woman that he's in love with is very demure and all this stuff and all this other stuff.
I just wanted to, I wasn't implying that the story wasn't any good for her. I'm saying this person did, and they happened to do a shitty job at it.
Okay. Well, anyway, but the mummy is a female, and there's some interesting things that happen, and of course there's going to be obvious commentary, you know, from a criticism standpoint of what that means and what we're saying about women or whatever. And I think it was either that same article or a different article was talking about how, well, this was another of Bram Stoker's attempts at criticizing The New Woman, because, you know, the mummy is a threatening character and he's threatened by all this stuff, which again, I didn't get that. I kind of got the opposite, because many times the main male character was kind of like the Van Helsing character, mm-hmm. is talking about how much we have to gain from learning about ancient cultures and all of the lost knowledge that there has been and all this other stuff. So I don't know. I just I liked these stories. I'm still reading. There's a third novelette in this collection, and then there's some short stories. So I'm enjoying mm-hmm. reading Bram Stoker. But as I go online and I must, while I'm doing other things, I notice, oh, there's something about Bram Stoker in this, and I look at it, and it's so different from how I experience the material. I start to doubt my own ability to tell a story, you know, that's not sexist or doesn't, you know, that doesn't leave a lot of room for a person to think that I actually have a problem with women or
and the best you can do is the best you can do. And in this world where these things are getting more nuanced, it's gonna happen. Somebody's gonna read some shit you already have out there and find it that way. And you shouldn't be scared, because one of two things. I think it's highly unlikely that a position like that you're going to hold for your entire life, but it turns out you were wrong.
Yeah.
You're gonna keep looking, and either someday you're gonna figure it out. And while that will be sad, I've had realizations where I'm like, oh my god, I really thought that or whatever. It's awesome, because you know now.
Yeah, it's a move forward.
Like,
sure.
Well, and it's new stuff, and you're like, holy shit, this is a great new perspective. I actually want to talk about that with something in a minute. And now, I feel like I get feminism better, that kind of thing. Or you're going to go through your life and be like, yeah, I still think I'm right on this one.
Well, and it could be wishful thinking. Like, right? I mean, I bring stuff to these stories, too.
Maybe
this is how I want to see it.
So do they. And people will focus on the parts that they focus on, and it's not always the same.
Yeah.
They don't take the same meaning out of it. And if the right person or people does that at the right time, boom, it is widely considered in the academic community that blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's right. Because culture influences that, too.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's all that's been going on my week. I don't know harp on that, but
I'm a hit you with something here.
Okay.
That I shouldn't be. I literally told this to my wife the other day and told her she'd be the only person to hear about this. It was very embarrassing, but here's it gonna go.
Okay.
So, writing this book and stuff, and gonna write this next one, and kind of excited. I don't know that I'm ever gonna make any money on it, and I'm learning that successful writers still don't make enough that I could quit the job I have right now.
That's true. A lot of successful writers don't need another job.
So I'm like, this is really about the craft and stuff like that. But I still, and it's not even on par. Like, be kind to me, people, because this is a big, I occasionally daydream that I'm a successful sci-fi fantasy author and I'm invited to, like, be on panels at sci-fi con and stuff like that.
I do that.
And, like, seriously, like, if people, like, what if somebody asked me this kind of thing? What would I say?
Sure.
It seems so ridiculous to me.
I do that, too.
It's I'm like, what sage advice am I going to give when people consider me a sage?
Why is that ridiculous?
I don't know. It's just a weird wish fulfillment fantasy thing.
But it's also part of our culture. Like, if you write a certain type of thing and it's successful, this is something that actually might happen.
It's
not completely unreasonable to think about it.
All right. Whatever makes you comfortable. I'm horribly embarrassed.
But if
you
want
to explain to William why this is... I mean, on a certain level, you shouldn't, because it's a fantasy, whatever. On a certain level, I also am not embarrassed of some of the things I watch on porn that I could tell you about, but it would freak you out. At the same time, to admit it out loud, you know, it's a little bit vulnerable. It's like, yeah, I like to sit around and say, what if I was so important that people wanted to know my thoughts on writing?
Well,
or what if I was so important that people started cosplaying as my characters? And it just feels goofy. If you want to tell us which one is wrong, go to themagicaltalkinghat.com and tell us, because it could be me. But anyway, I do this, and one that has been on me recently is the time when somebody comes up to the mic and points to a spot or a thing in my books and is like, this feels really sexist to me, or this feels really whatever.
Mm.
And I think about what I would say to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about it a lot. Part of the reason I think this has been coming up lately is a whole bunch of successful white guys have been getting in big trouble for shit they've been doing lately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
Keep it the fuck up. Every day some giant CEO of something resigns or takes a leave of absence because somebody finally came forth with sexual harassment claims or whatever. Run with that, please, everybody. Hashtag MeToo is my favorite hashtag of all time, and I'm really just praying it's going to be a real thing and not just something we play around with for a year and forget about it,
yeah.
But it feels like it might. I mean, real practical change is already happening, so.
Yeah.
But, so that may be why it's in my head, but it consequently, I've seen a lot of apologies. I've also seen a lot of apologies in air quotes.
Mm.
And so it gets me thinking about this stuff. And honestly, I think, I mean, obviously, if they say it and I'm like, oh, yeah. Because that happens a lot to me when I'm having these debates with people. They'll be like, oh, this scene was so terribly sexist. And I will both agree and disagree. Like, I look at it this way, and I think it's awesome. I absolutely can see mm-hmm. how that would look that way to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, if it's one of those, it's just abject apology. It's like, damn it. I try, but that's the big thing, is every single time somebody comes up with this stuff, people want to argue back. And I'm like, no. The point here is not whether or not I was sexist for writing it. The point is, did this person find it offensive? Yes. So I can be like, yeah, I didn't even think, taking it that way, it absolutely would. Shit, I'm sorry I missed that. I'll work on this going forward.
Right.
And I really hope that's something I can stick to in that kind of situation.
Well, let me, in relation to stuff you've just been saying, let me say this. I've often seen interviews with people who are successful, and then almost always someone will ask them, wow, did you ever dream things would be like this? And they always say no. And I always think to myself, really? I always think to myself, one day if it ever happens to me, and they say, did you ever dream this would happen? I'd say, well, yeah.
Of course, every once in a while.
I
think frequently the no's, well, either they're lying or being falsely modest, but also when it's a real left turn, like that was not what they were going for in their life, and then they became permanent. But I have seen ones where, like, you know, from a little kid, I wanted to do this thing, and they get asked that, and they're like, oh, yeah. Totally.
Well, sure.
I used to have totally fantasized sure. about
why,
this.
Why is that?
Just today, we had our annual meeting at my work, and there's a guy there, and he's like, when I was young, I really wanted to be a microbiologist. And then later I was going to be a lawyer, and he goes through all this, and he starts going like, I was going to be Eric Clapton, no, I was going to be an astronaut, all these things. And I don't even remember exactly what it is he does at our work, but I mean, he's a VP at an education assessment company. So he's like, obviously I'm not any of those things. And Trish is like, and actually when he was the age that he was figuring that shit out, he didn't know this was a job. So those are ones where you can be like, did you ever dream that this? And I mean,
but you're
right. A lot of people, like, that's totally the
but
thing.
Why does it embarrass you to talk about it? I don't understand. Should I be embarrassed that I've imagined those things too? Because I'm not.
I don't know what more to say about that. When people have to go to the blog and tell you, because I'm like, I just, it's a vulnerability. Like I say, it's similar to if I was going to tell you a sexual fantasy.
Is it though?
To me.
Huh. Okay.
It's a vulnerability about stuff, and there's that general thing. It's being too lenient with your. I don't know. There's an implied level of hubris with it that I'm not sure is necessarily accurate, but...
Oh. Because, I mean,
There's this idea that if you're dreaming about it, like... Well, especially in my case, because it's not like, oh, I dreamed I was a successful author. I'm like, no. I dreamed I'm a successful author doing very specific successful author things, and what would I answer in response to this person who is a huge fan of my work? And there's this idea, I think, tied into that there's a presumption then that might happen. I believe so much that I'm that good, that I will be that successful, that I'm bothering to come up with specific answers to specific questions.
So it seems a little conceited.
Yes. Mm. It's like I don't fantasize... it's a bad example now. When we didn't have a shitty president, I don't fantasize that a president calls me in, like, to help him balance the budget or whatever. And if I did, you'd be like, really?
Well, maybe you've got a lot of skill in economics.
Except I don't. I'm saying me. I'm not saying a person.
Oh.
I'm saying me.
Okay.
Like, and I'm not saying you would say it's bad to do that, but you'd be like, really? You fed about
that's
that?
That's a little weird.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I like, guess. Either do you think it's real, or it's like, is that a sex thing? Is there something that turns you on about telling the president how to balance the budget? In which case, it would also be weird for me to tell you that.
It would never occur to me that it's a sex
yes.
thing. But...
some people are into that.
Like,
this is a PSA, by the way. I've been trying to tell people this lately. If you look at porn, some of you don't, whatever. If you do, sometimes look for a fetish that you aren't into, but that, like, you've never seen before. Because sometimes you can find new things that are fun. And I'm not saying if it's something that, like, turns your stomach, like, don't go to that. But if you're like, what is the appeal? I don't get that one. Go look at a video. Maybe it'll do something. Because I will tell you right now, without any specifics, because I love you guys and won't do that to you, a couple times that's happened to me where I'm like, huh, I did not know that would be a thing, but that's a thing. So,
okay,
do
but,
that.
But, like, your fantasy about how you would respond to people asking about, say, female characters, that actually can feed back into you writing your female characters.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So it's actually good to think
and
about.
And my dreams of counseling Obama on the budget could feed back into my economic studies.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, a lot of the things that I think about along those lines is it's not just an idle fantasy, it's a trying to anticipate, you know, what a response to what I'm doing might be so that I can make some adjustments.
These things can be true. Both things can be true. There can be value in the process. It can also be embarrassing to tell people about it.
Yeah, you're right. I don't go around telling people. That's true. And because I'm embarrassed, no more because I think people... I guess I would... The reason I don't talk to people about it is because I assume they're going to take it as some kind of hubris.
Well, and there's also the general pretension of telling people about shit you imagined. Like telling people about a dream you had in general.
Yeah, right.
So there is that. But, no, and I mean, obviously, it's not a big deal. If it really was a big deal, I would not have told people.
That's true.
Like, that was the thing, is when I told Trisha, I was like, I wouldn't tell... Because I told her because I was making a point about it. I don't remember what it was. And I was like, yeah, you're probably the only person who's ever going to know about this. But then now I'm like, okay, no, there's a point to this, too.
I would be...
But to do it, I have to explain to you guys, sometimes I pretend I'm a successful author already, and then I'm at a con, and there are people in line with my book, and they want to sign it, but they have a problem with what's in, you know,
that
kind of thing.
I think that's great. I think that's perfectly normal and natural and helpful.
And down to brass tacks, most people are going to agree. They're also going to be embarrassed in a similar situation.
But yeah, I wouldn't.
It's one of those things, like when people don't want to ask for help,
yeah,
but they would give help in the exact same situation, like, and say there's nothing to be embarrassed about, because but they're embarrassed to ask.
I've never told you that I imagined those things. I've never told you that.
No.
But again, it doesn't seem relevant.
And yet, weirdly, it still went that way. Like, I'm now more embarrassed that I know that about you. So apparently it's just me. I'm just constantly embarrassed by the thought that people are fantasizing about being successful authors.
Are you surprised that I've had that experience?
Not really.
See, of course not. I don't think anybody's surprised.
Well, and it's you, so nothing can surprise me. Except for shit that is already established fact that you later contradict. Otherwise, if it's new sections of William, like, nothing surprises me. I had to explain to my brother this weekend. We were talking something with, and Trish is like, and William is always excluded. I'm like, no. William is excluded unless he's mentioned by name. If I say every human, William's excluded. If I say every human and William, William's included. So you're trying to explain that.
Okay, why don't you talk about your week before we lose all the time? I took up.
Saw Rhea Butcher and Cameron Esposito.
Oh yeah,
Minneapolis was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really cool. They both, because I've seen both their stand-ups before, I think it's changing for both of them.
Mm.
And it's still great, but it's evolving, I feel like.
Mm.
And this is all my speculation, but my theories are, I feel like Rhea is finally getting really comfortable with her success, because she's just more energetic now.
Mm.
Whereas before, I thought she was a little more sort of demure. Demure is the wrong word for Rhea Butcher. But a little more...
reserved?
Stoic.
Stoic, yeah. Maybe,
yeah.
Okay.
And Cameron, I don't know. I just feel like she, now having been married for a while and stuff like that, is sort of settling into a different point in her life. Her perspective just seems different. Like, sure, she doesn't seem different. Although she has a new haircut. She doesn't have the side mullet anymore. She's got it pretty short. This is the fun thing. No opener... except basically the two of them. They come out and just sort of banter in what I think is, at least the majority of, is improv at the moment. Because it's a lot about talking about the city they're in and stuff like that, or at least it was for us. So that was really fun. I do have to tell you one, because you're the only other person I know in the world who cares about baseball. So Rhea Butcher cares about baseball.
Oh, okay.
And... they're talking about my boy, and she talks about she did the whole thing because she's from Ohio.
Okay.
And she says, "Yeah, I'm from Ohio. So my team
is Cleveland,
is
right?
The Cleveland." And before she can say anything, someone in the audience went,
"Right."
And she lost her mind, like four times. Rhea had to stop talking so she could put her elbows on her knees to laugh because she was laughing so hard. She was like, "Yes. Like, there's a whole thing, and I'm still going to do it. It's part of my act.
Yeah.
But from now on, that's just what I'm going to call them, the Cleveland." Because she does not like the name, obviously.
Well, the logo,
history of the mascot, all of that stuff. Yes. She's really pissed. And she's like, people say, "That's just your white guilt." And she's like, "Yes, I'm white, and I'm guilty."
That's great.
One of her, like, a coworker someplace or whatever, apparently they were in the series sometime recently, and they were like, "Hey, you're home. Cleveland's your home team. You should be excited." And she's like, "Yeah, like, what's wrong?" It's like, "Well, you know, there's all this stuff with the name and the appropriate history and all the things, and it's just kind of racist." And the guy's like, "But I get all that. But, like, you did grow up with them. Like, you know, you're literally from there. So I feel like I give you a pass for that." And she's like, "That's what racism is. It's just two white people giving each other a pass."
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It was good. And Cameron Esposito had a great bit about how when you're a lesbian and you live in Chicago, you're required to ride a bicycle. That was a whole bit. Yeah, and some crazy stuff. I didn't realize Cameron has history. Cameron has, like, social anxiety history that led to, like, blackout destructive episodes and things. Which is funny, because she's just such a cute little perky thing. But But yeah, they had this whole opening that was just great. I love watching the two of them go back and forth. And it wasn't nearly as, like, funny, like, I wasn't, like, dying laughing, but it was just fun to watch, just the two of them. And, like, all, because this is a whole tour they're doing, and they're talking about that whole thing. And when we left, they were going to stick around. There was, like, a bar upstairs, and they were going to stick around and all that. And we didn't stick around, but we were going out a side exit, and security was there, and it was weird, and it was because they were coming in from their bus that way. So they passed within like 3 feet of me, and I said, "We love you guys," and they're like, "Yeah," because they were clearly tired and really wanted a drink. But that was fun too. And there was a woman when we first came down. This was in the Minneapolis Women's Club. I say Women's Club, not Women's Club, because that was made a point. Singular Women's Club. We don't know why.
Okay.
And it's basically all underground from the look. Like, it looks like the stately thing. But we went in, we went downstairs, we went down two more flights of stairs, and we're like, this must be where it is. No, wait, this is the bar. Where's the theater? And somebody's like, it's down. So then we went down some more. Like, I don't know if we were underground or what. Like, it was really deep down there. But it was a neat place. But what was my point? Why was I bringing that up?
I don't know.
It was at the Women's Club. There was probably a good reason for it, but
yeah,
No. So we come downstairs, the last thing, and I look down the hall and over, like, past, like, in a little separate foyer, like, that's gonna. I thought I saw Rhea for a second.
Oh yeah.
And then I'm like, no, wait, that's not her. But so then I go over and say, so you're just standing around here, so when people come down the stairs for a second, they're like, that's Rhea Butcher, huh? And I told Trish that I did this, and she was like, what the fuck? What did they say? And they said, oh my God, I've never been so flattered. That is awesome. No, that's not, but thank you. And I was like, yep, you should be. And I was like, yeah, no, I get it. Like, I take risks. But I'm not going to say something like that unless the person I am looking at, I can tell by looking, sorry, true, 100%, is if you look that much like Rhea Butcher, you are not offended to be told you look like Rhea Butcher. Rhea Butcher has a very decisive look. Like, she decided how she was going to look.
Yep.
And so, yeah, if you're going for that. And that was the thing. Like, first of all, percentage of audience butch female was off the charge. I think it was like 104%. But also, we had been talking about this on our way in, what the man percentage was, and it was hard to tell because there was a lot of androgyny in that audience. I'm guessing 20% max.
Really?
I was a little bit surprised. Those of us that were there were very enthusiastic, and like, that's the thing, nobody. It was a small enough tour and specific enough. I feel like nobody was like, oh, live comedy show, let's just go. You know, so everybody who was there knew who they were.
Sure.
Except my brother and my nephew. And I knew who they were, so that was fine. My nephew's like 14, so some of the stuff kind of went over his head. But he liked a lot of it. My injury is, or my back is getting better slowly. Today was not a good day. I'm still really grooving on Hammer's House of Horror. Did I talk about this before? Yeah.
You did.
It's amazing. Saw one the other day in a role so small, I believe it had two lines, and I believe it was credited as last victim, and that was it. And also died off stage, which no one else in the whole show died off stage, and like five other people died. Pierce Brosnan.
No kidding.
Yep, little baby Pierce Brosnan was adorable. I realized I have to stop reading the little blurb about what each episode is about.
It gives it away, probably. Yeah.
Why? It doesn't have to.
I know.
But this one is shitty. That was the thing. Just today,
I know.
They were like, this guy's got a secret. He was an ex guard at a concentration camp. The whole first half of the movie, you are led to believe this sweet little old Peter Cushing was a prisoner at the concentration camp. But I'm like, I already know, because it said it.
Was it Peter Cushing?
Yeah, Peter Cushing. He's an ex-Nazi. He was adorable. see, it's all adorable.
He did a lot of Hammer stuff, but I didn't know he did, like, little Hammer stuff.
Oh, yeah, no. He was, well, it's BBC. He's like, there are no small parts, just small paychecks. But Yeah, there was a different one where they were like, a young woman thinks she's possessed by a killer or whatever. So then, in the investigation, when we had this guy as the suspect, I was like, yeah, no, it's definitely not him. Thing told me, young woman.
Yeah.
Fuckers.
Why are they doing that?
I don't know. They're assholes.
What is this on? What service?
This is on Amazon. Get it, people.
But Netflix does it, too. Netflix gives stuff away.
Yeah, oh, no, I didn't mean that. I meant everybody should watch this. They're hilarious. if you don't have a subscription to Shudder, I think it's Shudder, you'd have to pay, like, $20 for the season. But there's, like, 13 of them. They're, like, hour-long. It's awesome. And it's they're super British, but they're also, like, very... their time period, 1980 TV show, very much, both in terms of the aesthetic and the quality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, so it's really just a hilarious good time, and it's really fun to see. I watched one where the main character involved, who was basically the salesman who was also kind of, he was a very guy's guy and, like, had a thing for his secretary and stuff like that, played by the guy who played Brody in the Indiana Jones movies, and also played the butler in Trading Places.
Mm.
He's a guy, if you saw him, you'd recognize him. This was like back before any of that. And they're like, oh, look, it's adorable. It's all adorable, is what I'm saying. Hammer's House of Horror. Adorable. I tweeted to Riff Tracks, I was like, this should be your next set of shorts, because this is amazing. Oh, and I watched, there's a new Riff Tracks Live out there for Miami Connection. And that thing was hilarious. It was a movie about a group of guys who are best friends, and they are a band called Dragon Sound, but they also do martial arts and fight ninjas. Not even kidding about a single breath of that.
And maybe
the two songs we got to hear them do were Friends Forever, which was adorable, and Against the Ninja.
Mm.
That was the core. It was Against the Ninja over and over again. like serious, like, late 70s, early 80s synth rock band, but they also fight ninjas, because there were fucking ninjas in this movie. Mm-hmm. Also, Miami Connection, this movie,
yeah,
all takes place in Orlando, I believe. It very decidedly takes place in a city that is not Miami. A lot of ninjas, and it basically, what's hilarious is what this one guy produced it, and he's a martial arts badass, and he plays the main character in it, and he didn't write or direct it, but he plays the main character. He's a terrible actor, but he's also a martial arts badass, so you just see him killing everything. And this was a Riff Tracks Live of it, so, like, it had been a broadcast thing and, like, a Fathom event. Mm-hmm. And they had broadcast the place, and they said, like, YK Kim was the guy produced. We know he's in the audience in the Orlando studios right now, or in the Orlando theater. Please don't kill us, because we're gonna make a lot of fun of you. And they did. And yeah. And of course, because it was just at the right, again, late 70s, early 80s, a bunch of guys who are the best friends, one might say friends forever.
Mm-hmm.
They all live together, and the homoeroticism is off the charts. Most of them do everything with their shirts off all the time, and they're just they're playing with each other, and they're more like throwing grapes at each other's mouths. And I don't know that there was a tickle fight in there, but, like, it's real close. It was hilarious. So
did they toss the football around?
No, these guys actually knew the sport. Just one sport, though, that was. And they murdered a lot of people later. Like, when they were fighting the bad guys, one of them had, like, a stick, and he hit him in the neck with it, and they did it so that basically it ripped open the neck, and blood was... And he hit him with, like it was a blunt instrument. Mm. And they made a joke later about, oh, yeah, his pipe was really sharp. So, yeah, it had really bad effects, too. Yeah, I think that's it. We're running out of time, so we probably should. Sorry, it's been a long day. It's not been a bad day. Like I said, it was an all ACT meeting today. Or sorry, all company meeting. I don't want to say where we're. I usually find those things really boring. This one was kind of cool.
That's good. Something I wanted to say about the room.
What did you want to say about the room?
One of the things I noticed was the Foley was terrible.
Oh, yes!
But then they also did voiceover stuff for the sex scenes. So you could hear kissing, but also, like, yeah. comments they were making.
Yeah, every single thing about the sex scenes, like, individually felt like its own major mistake.
Yeah.
Like, obviously the whole thing was a terrible idea, but just, like, it's also, everything was also, and if you were going to do this terrible thing, why the hell would you X? Like, for every little detail.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It was like if you were going to make the 100% worst scene you could, kind of thing.
The Foley and the voiceover stuff, that's all post-production stuff. That's not something that happened accidentally on the set that you don't notice. You deliberately put that in that way.
And somebody chose that fucking music.
Yeah.
And, and editing. I mean, although, to be fair, I do feel like it was probably really well edited. I feel like it probably saved us from a lot of things.
Yeah, probably. That's probably true. All right, Jazz wants to know.
What does Jazz want to know?
In this post-factual world, what steps can be taken so that people can reach a consensus on any issue?
Ooh! I'm going to talk about something completely unrelated to that. Okay. And it's terrible.
All right.
Because Jazz reminded me by her name.
You know, you're not going to talk about that, are you?
Did we already talk about this? I made you watch the video, right?
Well, I mean, this is something I already knew about, and I never bring up because...
You specifically knew about that?
Yeah.
All right, I didn't know that.
Well, a lot of Star Wars fans know about that.
I didn't know that.
It's like an embarrassing thing that you don't talk about as a Star Wars fan. That's not even
the worst thing, though, for me. Okay. The worst thing for me was the guy named Ellen Sleazebaggio.
I know, that was funny. That I didn't know, but it's funny.
There's a Star Wars character, like for realsies, named Elon Sleazebaggio.
I didn't know that.
Heads up, he's kind of a sketchy dude.
he's the guy that offers Obi-Wan death sticks in
The death sticks
in
guy.
The second movie or something.
Elon Sleazebaggio. Oh, yeah, and where he says, you want to rethink your life.
Yeah, Elon.
Did he have to change his name then if he rethought his life?
I don't know.
Like, so many.
I didn't know his name was that.
It's
I didn't
always.
Know that.
So, yeah, I'm not going to talk about the thing except to say, if you feel like it, look up what genre of music the Mos Eisley Cantina Band plays, and then cry. Because it's just not, as they said in the video where we saw this, no human wouldn't go, but wait, that's...
right.
Like, so yeah, so Jazz reminded me of that.
That's nice.
Anyway, this question is hard. I don't like
well, it is
question.
Hard because...
Actually, and I don't even think it's the thing. This is one of the few situations where I'm with you, I think.
Okay. That's a scary thought for sure.
It's an issue of scale. You're not going to achieve consensus. You have to drop down what social scale you're dealing with to achieve consensus. So, this country's never going to agree. If you're lucky... really lucky, maybe you get your town to mostly agree. But ultimately, it needs to be a small enough group. Maybe you can achieve consensus in your fucking club, but that's the best you're going to have.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you should say that too, because one of the things that I see a lot, like on YouTube and other news outlets like to, or media outlets like to show these things, where two people... Someone will say, well, we got a Trump supporter and a Clinton supporter together to talk, blah, blah, blah. And invariably, when these two people sit down to talk, they find out they've got more in common than not. And so on and so forth, and whatever. But as you say, that doesn't scale up. I mean, they can sit at the table and they can agree on these things, but eventually they have to go to, you know, flip the voters' lever. You know, eventually they've got to vote for a candidate. So... at some point, they're going to be watching a debate on television, and they're going to have to decide between those two things.
And also, so, your buddy, who happens to disagree with you, maybe not even your buddy, your coworker, you're more likely to listen to them and be reasonable and discuss with them than you are, say, a person online whose entire identity you know only based on the fact that they support someone you don't.
Right.
So, in close community, again, you're more likely to put forth the extra effort to do that.
Right. Well, even in those things where they get two people who are strangers to talk to one another who have these various different views, you know, there's a little bit of mediation that goes on.
Well, and it becomes humanizing. It's face-to-face, it's more humanizing.
But But I think what Jazz is talking about is that one way people come to agreement on things is if they can at least agree on the empirical facts.
Yes.
Which we can't even agree on that, because this is the thing of, since we were talking about the Me Too hashtag and all that stuff. This is the thing that so-called conservatives and so-called liberals argue about a lot, because I have heard conservatives say that liberals have this idea about the oppression of women, and they do not base it on any facts. It's totally ideological. And if you look at the facts, and then they'll state what they think the facts are, and they'll make reference to evolutionary psychology and all these other
sociobiology.
Yeah, all these other not science things, but they'll use that as a basis to decide what their science is. And they'll insist that the left, people
disclaimer,
on the left...
Disclaimer, technically sociobiology counts as being scientific, but I still say fuck sociobiology.
Well, not if you consider something scientific in that it puts forth a theory that suggests hypotheses that you can test.
That's true. Sociobiology cannot be
does tested. Not do that, and a lot of evolutionary psychology doesn't do that.
Also literary critique.
Some guy makes something up, and if it sounds clever enough to everybody, they accept it, basically. And that's not science. Okay, well, then they insist the left doesn't use any science at all, which is not true.
Yeah.
But that's what they say, like, how can you be saying that? Because... Because when you have a little debate, because I've seen them have debates with people on the left, and they will cite scientific studies and whatever. So even if they don't think they're citing the science well or citing good science, the claim that they don't rely on science at all is a false claim, false claim. So anyway, so that's what we've got in relation to questions about not just sexism but also racism, is the right wants to claim that it actually doesn't exist. And that science says it doesn't exist, and the left knows it doesn't exist, but they're just making it up to stir people up, you know, to get votes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these are two big issues that we kind of need to address in our world. How is that going to be addressed if each side says that science is on their side? And yeah, that's tough. But of course, I personally do think that is also one of those issues that. How would you legislate that away?
Yeah, well,
you know, people are just going to have. There's just going to have to be a shift in the culture.
And
eventually.
To be fair, at this point, much more common is the left says science is on our side, and the right says God's on our side. People trying to push scientific, socially conservative arguments. I don't see it does happen, but I don't see them approaching it, or even claiming to approach it.
I suppose. I mean, I have to admit.
It does happen.
A lot of
and that's the thing, because you can't call them just the right and the left. There's so many variations within both of
those
categories.
Sure. Well,
I know libertarians who both are, like, definitely libertarians, but one is hard right and one is hard
sure,
left.
Sure.
And stuff like that.
I, me too. But, well, another thing is the whole global warming thing.
Yep.
That's a huge thing that has a direct policy impact on things that are.
Absolutely.
That are affecting people in the real world all the time.
And people are cherry-picking their studies.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
What I hear more often, again, more often, is two variants. One is, this is just natural. This is how the Earth goes. It goes in these cycles, and it gets warmer. It's going to get cooler again. It's fine. And the even further along that road one, God will handle it. God wouldn't let this be going on if it was bad, or God's going to save us at the end and stuff. And again, there's nothing to put up against that. This is why these people still exist. And also nowadays, both sides frequently don't double-check themselves. Once somebody on the right or the left sees a study or a convincing speech that agrees with what they agree with, that's the evidence they bring forth every time they debate after that.
Right, and also, like I was saying before, there's some of this is deliberate. I mean, like, the sources that I trust that give me information that's not quite accurate, they know it's not quite accurate.
And sometimes and it's deliberate in that they are genuinely like, we're going to tell these lies to sell viewers or whatever, or just to fuck with people. But there's also ones where people are like, I heard this, I don't really know if it's true, but it sounds like it's something I want to be true. So I'm going to... And so they know that it might not be true, and they don't care.
Well, in the case of the people I'm talking...
And again, you can get that on both sides.
In the case of the people I'm talking about, they've decided that the policy direction they want things to go is the right way. And they don't want to take the time to explain that to their members. So the ends justify the means. So they tell a story that they know isn't 100% right, but it'll get their members to do the thing that they think is for the greater good, and so they justify it that way. And that's fine. I mean, that happens.
And
but it does make it difficult.
Members are going with whoever they think is the smartest, which frequently translates to whoever you like the most.
Yeah, right. So I don't know how any of that serves to answer Jazz's question, except that it does make things complicated.
We are fucked, Jazz, is what we are saying.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting what you're saying is, because I listen to, there's a group of left-wing commentators I listen to who I respect. I don't agree with everything they say. But I respect how they come up to their conclusions, yep. And also how they communicate with their fans, for lack of a better term. And I also listen to some right-wing commentators. Again, I don't agree with them on everything, but I respect how they come to their conclusions, and I respect how they explain things to their fans. The difference between those two groups for me, though, is that sometimes, even though I don't agree with everything the left group says, I pretty much always respect their perspective or whatever. Sometimes, like 10% of the time when the group on the right says something, I don't respect it because it's very... the logic and reasoning becomes very fuzzy, which is really weird because the other 90% of the time they're very smart and very logical, and they can spot, you know, logical fallacies and contradictions. But this 10% of the time, they make no sense, and it almost always has to deal with gay people, feminism, and questions about race and things like that. But also, now that you mentioned it, almost all of those things are mingled with religion somehow too, like. Like, yeah, this 10% of the time, in their conservative view, religion gets mixed in, and they have to bend the reality to fit their religious convictions in that 10% of the time. I don't experience that with the left, mostly because one of the guys that I watch on the left is expressly atheist. But these guys on the right, 10% of the time, their religion can get in.
You can, but it's frequently an alternate religion.
Yeah.
But I mean, to be honest, there are people who absolutely believe that, you know, Jesus would want us to fix global warming, and they don't honestly know. Because, like I've said before, like, I believe in global warming. I haven't read the research. I haven't done the studies. I haven't read the studies. The people who I respect, the people who I trust, are telling me it is true. I see what they are telling me. I see what people who disagree with it are telling me, and their arguments aren't very good. I keep, every time I see Ann Coulter diss global warming, I'm like, actually, any position Ann Coulter holds, I have never seen her try and explain why she holds that position.
Yeah, well, I have to say,
that kind of shit interesting.
For that 10% of the time, they're off the rails and they don't make any sense. And like I say, religion's often mingled in there. There's nothing actually about feminism or actually paying attention to issues of race or global warming and that stuff. None of those things actually threaten their religion, not really.
Because
as you just pointed out, there are plenty of people with that religion who have no problem with those things. So it's not so much that they're religious, it's that they're very traditional in their views of religion.
And obviously there's no way to, this is entirely anecdotal because there's no way to verify ever, but a not insignificant number of people out there, I'm convinced, are anti-homosexuals because the idea of homosexual sex is gross to them. And I don't think they're even necessarily aware of that. But it's gross to them, so their brain immediately goes, obviously, unnatural. And that, coupled with the, I spent my whole life, that wasn't a thing, all of that leads to, clearly, that's messed up.
Well, you know, what another thing that ties it all together, and probably, weirdly, global warming in a way, is
we're about to solve global warming here, people.
No, it's another thing besides religion that's mixed in is their concept of the family, which they would, I think they would insist that their concept of the family is not just based on their religion, but based on this some objective notion of the family unit being the most basic unit of the Republic.
And that was the original,
you know, so that's the basic political unit. So a lot of things like feminism and gay rights threatens that. The way the race arguments threaten that is they insist that the problem with non-white people in our country is not about systematic racism, but it's about single parent homes, and it's about how the policies of Democrats have encouraged these families to be single parent homes, and they're wrecking the families. So it's all about family all the time, and
I believe it's pronounced fambly,
and tied in with religion, right? So they feel like they're defending the fundamental political unit of our republic, and they don't even notice how much they logically contradict themselves, how much they cherry pick scientific stuff or say they're being scientific when they're not, how many fallacies they use, even though when they're not talking about those issues, they can recognize logical fallacies and be perfectly reasonable. So it's really bizarre and weird. And it does seem like as long as the right is stuck in that they're not really going to find a place to agree with the left on things, seems like.
Well, I keep telling myself that 20, 30 years ago, both the left and the right, a lot of people held roughly the same beliefs they do now, but they weren't so conflicting. Like, you didn't... It wasn't automatic. I have people now, very much, you're Republican, you clearly are horrible and have terrible views and you're going to ruin the world. And I'm sure... there are Republicans out there who hear that when they hear Democrat,
yeah.
Or liberal. Like, there are people if I said I'm a liberal, they would be done with me forever right then. And I have a lot of friends who, if they hear somebody say I'm a conservative, they're finished with
them. And I agree with you, 30 years ago, I don't think that was true.
There were some. I mean, there are always some. You'll always hear somebody's grandpappy would never.
But not like now.
But nowadays, yeah. And I find myself doing it as well. I find myself being like, oh my God, those people... so we have to watch out for that. We're over time, and this is depressing anyway.
Sorry.
So, be sure to join us again next week, and go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com. You can talk about other things other than how embarrassing our fantasies are. Go tell us what fetish you looked up that was new to you, and how you felt about it. And then be sure to listen again next week, because we don't just think of you as listeners. We think of you as family.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.